I have a question for you. How do we explain to other or to another about being under grace and still obey the Torah? Are we under grace or are we under law? Not according to the Apostle Paul. We're going to hit the book of Romans today. You already know where I'm going because he's been there in my house many times. The first thing that I know, you've heard me say this before, and in your old King James Version is very, very important because a lot of you have it, and you need to block out or cross out, I'd say, a certain word in the book of John because it does not exist in Greek at all. Most of the new translations, they don't put that word there, and it's actually recorded correctly. But in the book of John, first chapter, book of John, very first chapter, John, in the 17th verse. Now, this is Old King James. If you've got Old King James, be aware of this. You're probably new ones. They probably took it out. He says, for the Torah was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Yeshua, Messiah. The word but does not exist in Greek at all. So, the Torah was given to Moses. Grace and truth came by Yeshua HaMashiach. Yes.
Are you going about the Hebrew word et that's both a conjunction and a disjunction?
No, this is Greek here. This
okay.
Let me repeat my question to you. Remember what the question was? You forgot.
Yeah.
You're down. Now, we have to ask ourselves a really good questions, you know. So I have to ask you a real simple question. If grace and truth came by Yeshua, that means Genesis all the way to Malachi has no truth in it. Right? No truth in it whatsoever because it came from Yeshua. And has no grace whatsoever because it came by you. Is that what it's saying? So kind of a stupid statement for someone to say, right? This is an Anglican, by the way, your King James Version is an Anglican translation of the Bible. It's not a Presbyterian one. It's not a Seventh-day Adventist. It's not a Catholic one. It's not a Baptist one. It's Anglican. When you read something in the New Testament, and it has certain phrases in it that you cannot find anywhere in the Tanakh. Tanakh, by the way, is for all the Old Testament. You can't find it. They've been added because of Anglican doctrine. But I'm not going to go through those things today because it's a real long process. You're going to have to ask God to help you see it. Now, we have this picture. By the way, what is the word Torah? What does it mean? It means laws, means instructions, means what? So? Hebrew word for Torah.
When Yahshua said law and prophets, which one is law and which one's prophets?
Okay, first five books of the Bible. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Yeah, primarily it centers in on the book of Deuteronomy, but that's another discussion later on. And the prophets, self-explanatory, who they are. By the way, there's a whole lot more prophets in there than we think about. The book of Joshua is a prophet. First and Second Kings, prophecy. First and Second Samuel, prophecy. Now, it's those things that we don't look at as prophecy. We think they're just writings. No, they're prophecies. It's very important to know that when you study the Tanakh, they had that separation completely. And we start reading it. It really is prophetic. Tremendous amount of things. But Daniel is bringing out quite extensively, my son, what that prophecies are all about. And that's all written all over the place. Incredible. I even learned an awful lot from that man. Now, he says here in Romans 6 chapter, verse 12, 14, for sin shall not have dominion over you, for ye are not under Torah, but under grace. That's the odd, really strange statement, doesn't it? Okay? It's confusing. When you just take this sentence, take this one-liner out of the sixth chapter, and place it on your announcement that you're going to preach about next week, and nothing else, everybody knows what you're talking about. The law is done away with. We're no longer in the law. We're under grace. Right? It's very careful when you read Apostle Paul's writings. In the book of Romans, he uses a tremendous amount of definitions. He defines what grace is. He defines what justice is. He defines what redemption is. He describes what faith is. He describes in detail, precise detail, what they mean. And sometimes we don't study the book of Romans, and we just jump to Galatians, or we jump to Timothy, or we jump to, and it's his writings. We think, oh, he really meant this. No, the definitions is in the book of Romans. If you understand the definitions, if you don't understand what it says, what do you mean by that? Go to Romans and find out what he meant by it. He describes what he's talking about. Book of Romans, I believe very strongly why God put the book of Romans, the very first book after Acts, is because that book defines Devarim Elohim. All right. Now, I'll take another one-liner here. Romans, the first chapter. Here we have here now, and it says, by whom we have received grace, verse 5, and apostleship. Well, he must be talking about himself, right? For obedience to the faith. Now, what does faith mean? By the way, what is faith in Hebrew? Truth. What is faith in Greek? What? Trust. One's truth in Hebrew, the other one's trust. So, in a way, he says, obedient to the trust amongst all nations for his name. Verse 6. Among whom ye also are called of Yeshua HaMashiach. You're called what? What are you called? For obedience to the truth. For obedience unto trusting something. That's what you were called to do. Well, listen to that divine. It's very important. The object is to trust. Who are you supposed to trust? Yeshua HaMashiach, the Son of God. That's the subject matter why he came. If you believe me, if you trust God, trust me. You believe in God, believe in me. I am the truth. I am the way. I am the light. Right? Is that hard to understand? We're talking the Son of God here. We're not talking about Richard Agee. All right. So, through Yeshua, we can, we'll get to this point in a minute, be obedient. Because of and by ourselves, we don't have an internal strength to be obedient. Who is that quote? I'm using the quote here. Head of the church, end of quote. The Son of God is. Right? So we look to the Son of God for answers in relationship to something that he said, this is my blood, which is given for the New Testament. Oh, we need to pay attention to that, don't we? Right, so far we're okay? And all that it be in Rome, verse 7, beloved of Elohim, so for you some who don't know what Elohim is, a Hebrew word for God, so I use Elohim, called saints, grace to you, and peace, or safety, from Elohim, our Father, for the Lord Yeshua HaMashiach. So we have this now introduction. What does grace mean to you?
Grace is Yeshua helping us with everything that we cannot accomplish on our own.
Okay. Anybody else have any other definition? Ellie.
It means God doesn't kill me for what I did.
Oh, my. We have to read Romans to find out what that word means, don't we? If you don't read Romans, you're not going to know what that word means. Yes.
The scripture says that Christ took all my sins to the grave. That's grace. I don't have to die for them. He died for them.
All right. Let me ask you a question. During the flood, there was a man named Noah. Right? You remember who he is? All right. Just in case, go back there, 11th chapter, start reading about it. Anyway, he received something from God. He received grace. What? There's no blood spilled. Nothing took place except a lot of dead people and dead animals, except for him and his wife, sons, and daughter-in-laws, and a lot of animals. Now, what do you read when you read that Noah had grace? How did he get grace?
Faith. Through faith.
Okay. You're getting closer. He believed Elohim. Believed. Very important thing. Let me ask you a question. Try your very best. I'm going to give you another definition for it. Let's say somebody did something rotten to you. Really nasty. And they didn't even know it. And you have an option. You can either get even. They can pay for it. Or you can give them grace. You understand the definition of the word now? You have given a favor. You have chosen your will not to go against the person who's done this to you. I don't know if any of you have done this before, but if you have, keep that in mind. That's what really grace in Greek means favor. Having favor, having somebody be grateful and be gratitude. Now, when the person finds out that you really he did something to you, or she did something to you, and they come to you and they ask for forgiveness, you say, oh, it's already over with. Forget it. You hold no charges, right? How do they feel? Grateful. You know, grace comes from the word grateful, or grateful really comes from the word grace. It's being thankful. It's being pleased. Being joined together with. It's also, another terminology, it's merciful kindness. Not just loving kindness, merciful. Now remember the Messiah said something. He said to a group of Pharisees, remember talking about paying tithe of the mint and the cumin? And he says, you have ignored the weightier matters of the Torah and what's in the Torah. What do you say was in the Torah? Come on now. Justice, mercy, faith, or trust. When God confronts you, and He will, with the issue, and you are now looking at him and he's saying, by the way, you owe me something. I'm going to require this of you. I want your life and I consider the payment done. Right? Then we're even. And we say, oh, okie dokie. And honestly speaking, when you say okie dokie, he says, that's good because I took my son's life in place of yours. I gave you grace. I gave you grace. I gave you mercy. Justice had been made. I took my son's life for you rotten person. Now we're even. What's the next thing it's supposed to do? Mercy. And then trust. Now, what are you supposed to do? Trust. Who are you supposed to trust? The individual that took his son's life for your sake. Trust him. Is that how hard that is to understand? And that's what the Torah teaches. The Torah of them by itself cannot do that. But it teaches that because the Messiah says within the law and within the Torah and the prophets, it speaks mostly of me. And we believe and learn from Daniel. We learn it speaks an awful lot about the Messiah, more than you can imagine. Now try to understand grace. You cannot understand grace without the Torah or without the law. To understand grace, you really can't understand the thing that's connected to righteousness. Keep that word in mind. We're going to approach that word real quick here. What is righteousness? Simple definition.
Be upright.
Upright. So what is the upright doing? What does the word upright mean? Doing what is right. Simple definition of righteousness, doing what is right. How is grace connected to doing that which is right? Let me ask you a question. I'm just going to quote it. And it says here, "For I say unto you, that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you'll be by no means entered into the kingdom of heaven." Okay, the big word, isn't it? Well, what is the righteousness of the Pharisees? The what? They know the law. They live the law. They did what the Torah told them to do. Apostle Paul says the Torah is righteousness. Yes.
More of the lines of works.
Speak again.
More the line of works.
We'll get there. I understand. You know where I'm going with that one right now because you've been in my house. But you understand what I'm saying so far? What? Ask yourself really deep down inside yourself. Let me phrase it this way. Are you a law-abiding citizen?
Yes.
That's righteousness of the law. Now, your righteousness must exceed that. How does it go beyond that? Do you know how? Hey, this is open discussion, please. So many people heard me speak before. You should say something.
I don't know if this would be just one answer. I'm sure there are a few, but the motivation of your heart.
Okay.
You can do what's right by just following the rules, but if you actually have a desire in your heart to please God, that goes over and above sometimes.
You're entering into a circumcision of the heart.
I speed. And don't laugh. He followed me one time. And I have a bad heart about it because, see, I want to speed. I want to hurry up and get there. And I'm wasting time on driving there because I want to be there. And what I really need to do is change my heart toward being law-abiding because I will be blessed and not get any speeding tickets, for one thing, but because it's right.
All right. I'm going to quote a few things real quick. A lot of you already know what it says, but you heard me say, Daniel, you have something?
For me, personally speaking, of course, if I am a law-abiding citizen of the local ordinances, whatever they may be, to go beyond that, personally speaking, is when I speak of those ordinances and I help somebody else also become a law-abiding citizen of the local ordinances. I assist them. Yeah. I help them.
All right.
That's how I go beyond the requirement. Because I am not a police officer. There is no law that says I am authority to, you know, I have the rule to say you shall go do this or that. I am not given that rule.
Right.
But I am an ordinary citizen that I help others do the same. So using that, and that's how I live my existence, if I apply that same principle to a Torah-based lifestyle, then to go beyond the Torah is to help my fellow person follow along the same lines. to assist them the same way I do with the ordinary local ordinances of the state or government I live under.
All right, to clarify in a different words, Daniel, you're using the Apostle Paul's words here. Go ahead.
I exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees by leaning upon my Savior and King, because I of myself cannot possibly follow the letter of the law to the exact amount that it requires, because otherwise it would be death. So I have to lean upon my Savior and King to take up the slack for me. And that's when I go to the throne and ask for repentance.
All right, now, listen very carefully. Apostle Paul, believe it or not, I have a Bible. I can read it. Romans, 3rd chapter. I'm just going to read one liner down here. Therefore, verse 26. Therefore, if an uncircumcised man keeps the righteousness of the requirements of the law, will not his uncircumcised be counted as though it's circumcised? Is it a yes or a no? It's a yes. So what Daniel talking about here, using this the law, you can have righteousness of the law. Right? The Pharisees did that. That's why they're called Pharisees. They must exceed that. How do you get beyond that? How do you go beyond that? Yes.
He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness or mercy is what I'm used to, and to walk humbly with your God. When I read that, it just struck me so hard a few years ago. Love, mercy, I don't know how to do that. It's the heart. It has to be the heart of wanting God to change you.
Yeah, now we're having to hang around. We're getting into it. She mentioned the heart. We'll talk about the heart here for a moment, because that's where the grace is going to come in. Favor. Favorism is going to come. You're going to have given something by God that you yourself cannot do. Now let's talk about this. I'll use some one-liners here for a minute. You shall not have dominion. Sin shall not have dominion over you. Remember that one? Sin is a transgression of the Torah. 1 John 3:4. If there is no sin, then there is no Torah. Sin is defined by the Torah, Romans 3:20. The Torah also defines grace. Without the Torah being present, we have no grace. Ye are not under the Torah, but you're under grace. Romans 6:12-14. Whew, that's a lot of words, right? Do we understand those words? Now, Apostle Paul also said, we are to do something about the Torah. What are we supposed to do?
Write it down.
No. No. What?
Meditate.
No. What? Establish it. What part do you get to establish? The part you like?
All of it.
You get to pick and choose what word of God you want to follow? The Messiah said, you live by every word that proceeds out of the eternal. Which one do you get to throw away? Which one do you get to say it's no value to me? It's insignificant. It's no importance to me. I don't care if it's just a one-liner. I don't care about it. I don't live that way. Therefore, it doesn't apply to me, right? Is that what it says? Well, they're pretty powerful words, aren't they? So if we know that Messiah said, not one jot, not one tittle, we'll be gone. Yes.
That's also thought, word, and deed 24/7.
Okay. So now, we have to ask ourselves some questions. What kind of questions do you have?
Okay, I have a question. In the Torah, our instruction, it says, when you sin, you go do this, 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 and then the sin is erased.
Correct.
Or your sin is forgiven.
Correct.
Okay, so if I sin, and then I do what it says to do, and I am forgiven, Where in there did I break the law?
You didn't. Does that answer your question? Good. That was an easy one to answer.
So I didn't walk outside of the law, even though I walked outside of the law.
Now you're within the law.
I'm within the
law. Now you're going to establish something. Something in the law told you, now this is the penalty of it, and now you pay for the penalty. Now you're no longer an outlaw, you're an in-law.
Right. But that whole procedure is right. Still within the Torah, right?
Within the written Torah, correct. What does Isaiah say? Another Torah is going to come from not Mount Sinai, not from Moses, come from where? Zion. Oh, what is Zion? That's where the king lives. The king makes the law. And then the word of that law goes to Jerusalem in a temple, and then the people in the temple hear the Torah that's going to come from in the book of Isaiah out of Zion, not out of Mount Sinai. You got the picture? So we have to ask ourselves, what Torah? Which Torah? I mean, there's more than one?
Well, when he said to the guys, to his men, Messiah says, well, if you keep all those rules, but if you break them inside of yourself, then you're in trouble. And they said, nobody can do that, because that was unheard of.
Right. He's addressing them with the physical Torah. Where's the other one? Has the other one already arrived?
But God says that one day I will write my law in your heart, and I will give you a heart of flesh.
When did that occur? Did it occur? When?
At the crucifixion. That's what I'm thinking. Is that when it occurred? Because that's when.
Now, technically speaking, you're close, but not quite close enough. You're awful darn close. What happened in Acts?
Day of Pentecost,
which is coming up next Shabbat. All right. Remember I told you about the dove, the first dove and the second dove? By the way, there was a third one. It happened that day of Shavuot. And it remained. Now I'm asking you a question. Why would you need that Spirit of God? Do what?
We need to have it to make for to know the truth and to make it through what we're going to go through.
Okay.
Without the Spirit, we are carnal and we hate God.
Okay. Now, I want to tell you something. Most of you probably don't really know this deep inside, but it's the truth. All right. Now, there are certain ones, the Apostle Paul says, those who are burdened with something, you who are stronger, take the load, right? Now, he also said, God did not give you a spirit of fear, but of to be called something. To be called the sons of God. Now, if you have that much power, some of you probably don't think you have anything, but if you have that much power, you get to call upon that power at any given time. The problem is, we don't believe that very much these days. We believe that the law of the flesh is greater than the law of the Spirit. The book of Romans talks about the law of the Spirit. Not the law of Sinai, not the law of flesh, but not talk flesh. It talks about the law of the Spirit, or I would call it the Torah of the Spirit. Now, you understand, there is a second Torah. The first Torah, Apostle Paul says in Galatians, cannot deliver you from death. It cannot save you, no matter how much you work within it, no matter how much you do it, no matter how often you do it, no matter how many Sabbaths you keep precisely, no matter how many times holidays you take precisely, no matter how many times you wear different kinds of things to make it look like God, everything, it doesn't do anything for you. All it is an image. Right? So now we have to ask ourselves, now the written Torah talks about what sin is. If you never know what God says sin is, go to the Torah and find out. It teaches you that. It expounds upon it. Apostle Paul said that in relationship to when they were at Mount Sinai, it was added. What? It was added. To what? We talked about Abraham, right? Added to the promise. And when that promise came, we are no longer under the schoolmaster. And we say, oh, we can throw it away. Right? No, we have to go back and find out what the Word of God says. As we go back, we find out, we read it. That's why you just can't throw away what you want to throw away and get rid of what you want to get rid of. But Romans, the 3rd chapter, I opened up with a statement. Not opened a statement. Yes, I did. But my statement said, can't remember what it was right offhand. How do we do something? How do we explain to others about being under grace and still obey the Torah? Which Torah do you obey? The Torah of spirit or the Torah of the letter? Apostle Paul talks about two different Torahs. One's the Torah of the letter, or what we call the deeds of the law. And the book of Romans is you, Jews, who think you have salvation by the deeds of the written Torah, it's not there. How does it come by? 3rd chapter, Romans. Verse 20, first, therefore, by the deeds of the Torah, the written one, there shall be no flesh be justified in his sight, for the Torah is the knowledge of sin. That's all it's going to tell you. 21, what does it say? But now, there's a righteousness of Elohim without the Torah. Let me ask you a question. Does the creator of heaven and earth have to obey the Ten Commandments? No. He created them, but he didn't have to obey them. They're created for man, because man sins. God doesn't sin. Daniel.
God cannot honor his father, nor can he honor his mother. He cannot not steal, or they're absurd things. They're in there that he cannot obviously obey because they don't exist, they don't apply to him.
Okay. So now we have this phrase, the righteousness of God. Now, Apostle Paul says the righteousness of the law is one thing. Righteousness of the Torah, written Torah, there is a righteousness. He didn't say it was evil. This is righteousness in it. Okay, but now he talks about another word. The righteousness of Elohim. What is the righteousness of Elohim? Verse 22. But the righteousness of Elohim, which is by trust in Yahshua HaMashiach, unto all and upon all them that believe, and there is no difference. What do you believe about Yahshua? What do you trust him in? Do you trust Yahshua, Jesus, anytime? You see what I'm saying? It's aiming at one person, and that is the Son of God. Now, that's called righteousness of God. You remember what he told his disciples? Your righteousness must exceed. He wasn't talking about righteousness exceeding the law and you doing it. It's righteousness of God that exceeds the righteousness of Elohim, the righteousness of the Pharisees, even the righteousness of the Torah. You understand what I'm saying? Now we do learn what is written. We must learn what is written. Because it tells us about God. It tells you how God thinks. It tells you what God does. It tells you what his thoughts are. He tells you what kind of person he is. He describes in extreme detail who he is in the Tanakh. And he said to his disciples, you believe in Elohim, believe in me. If you have seen me, Philip, you have seen the creator of heaven and earth. Those are big statements. Right? Now, they were still in the flesh. And it took Pentecost, we call it Pentecost because it's the Greek word, in order for us to have that dove now coming down like, quote, flames, bad word and horribly translated, but nonetheless, it landed upon them because there was 120 of them. The big bird. So we have here, when does God give you his righteousness? Sorry, what?
When I believe.
When I trust. That's correct. Now, go back to Abraham. Remember him? Because he trusted him, God said, that man is righteous. Was he righteous because he obeyed a law? No. He believed righteousness could come without the death of the Messiah, by the way, because it happened to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I say many of the prophets. So what he was saying to the disciples, your righteousness must exceed that. What does that really mean to you now? How does your righteousness exceed the Pharisees? Doesn't say that. That's correct. That's an old Christian song. Trust and obey. That's an old Christian song. Let me ask you, Rose, you heard me. What does obedience mean in 1611?
To believe.
No. What does obey mean in 1611 English?
1611? Hear and respond.
That's right. Hear and respond. It's a Hebrew word for, what's that word we have? Shema. Say mean, hear and respond. Not obey, hear and react. Do something about what you just heard. That's correct. That's all it boils down to. But you are flesh, I am flesh. There's weaknesses, we fall, we stumble, because none are perfect, right? And when we do, guess what we have to do? Call upon the power, not of, quote, a spirit, but on the power of the living God, who granted and gave it to us, by and through his Son, his power passed on to us. Let me ask you a question now. Blessed are those who are poor in spirit, for there shall be the kingdom of heaven. Wait a minute. He said up here, if your righteousness does not exceed that of the, you will not enter into the kingdom of heaven. That's interesting. Is he double talking? What does it mean to be poor in spirit?
To recognize your need for the Spirit.
Because you have no power. You're so incredibly poor, so destitute, you need something from God. That's boiled down to it. Simple as that. That's why you be blessed. You are poor. Literally, the great Greek word means you don't have nothing. You have nothing. You own nothing. You've got nothing for you, going for you. You're as good as, you know, not being there. All right. We're almost finished. Back to Romans, 3rd chapter. Now we talk about the righteousness of God, right? If you keep, we can't go in Romans all the way to where I show you where he says there is a the Torah of the Spirit. I have a little longer, different speech, different understanding. But verse 23. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of Elohim, being justified freely by his grace through redemption. Oh. Justified. At no cost to you. He just did something. Why? Why would he do that to you? And charge you nothing?
Because he loves us.
The what?
For God so loved the world.
Okay. Redemption. The words there in that sentence is redemption. What is to redeem?
My back.
My back. He freely charged you nothing, but he bought you back. Did you know you were bought back? Did you know you were not even... Did you know you were... had a price on your head? He bought it back. How did he buy it back? Well, it says there, plain as day. Now, God did not do that with everybody all at once, does he? Yes.
In the Psalms, it talks about how the inheritance of God is the humans. If he went to all the trouble to make the earth and get it all ready for us and then make the people and use knowing that Adam and Eve thing was going to happen, then if he didn't buy the humans back, there would have been no benefit to the entire 7,000-year events. He had to buy us back. He had to give us an avenue back or we'd all just disappeared.
Okay. I can understand that one. No argument on it at all. Verse 25. This is the redemption portion of it. Okay. And Elohim has set forth a propitiation. Do you know what that word means? Okay, what does atonement mean? I'm actually looking at the word propitiation, not atonement. What does that mean? You what?
Paid the debt of somebody else.
Okay. Yes? It's to win somebody's favor. That's what that word means. To win somebody's favor. Okay. So, atonement or propitiation, it wins over something. Who is it or to appease? Who is winning? Wait a minute. I'm sorry, what?
We are being won back to God.
Somebody is doing something to win something. God is doing something to win something. It is not man doing something to win with God. It is God doing something to win with you. How did he win you over? How did he get you on his side? By the death of his son. He won. He won. All atonement, the day of atonement, day of Yom Kippurim. That's what it's all about. God did this to win you. He did this to win and bring you back to him. He did nothing you can do in your lifetime, how long you may live, to ever win God over on your side. It is God who wins you. Now that's true. That God so loved his creation that he's going to get it back. God is so involved with his creation, so much a part of his existence, if I can use that word, part of him is in his creation, and he's going to win it back. He's going to atone it back. He'll bring us back to him. How is he going to do that? Through the death of Messiah. The reason why your heart is now changed before the creator of heaven and earth is not because you decided to be loving and kind. Because God won you over. Did he get a good prize? No, he didn't get a good one. Not according to him. He quote, gambling for the big prize, end of quote. All his creation. So, when grace is there, and now we're under grace, what do you think now? He won you. You're part of you. You're part of him. I am of God, and God is of me. Can you actually say that? I have the power of my Creator's Spirit dwelling within me. It is because he had me in mind. Who am I that you should look down upon me? You know, when you stop and think about this for a moment, let's say you really wanted somebody that you really wanted them to be like you, and they don't seem to like you, and after a few years, all of a sudden, they adore you. Something happened to them, or something happened to you. They couldn't stand you, don't want to be around you, and all of a sudden, inside of them, they say, you know, I want you around my life now. God is not like that, is he? He's why you were still at war with him. For you were obnoxious with him. Would I anything do with him except cuss his name up one side down the other? He had to win you over. A propitiation. He had to win your favor. As well as you won. You got favor from him. That's why you're under grace. That's why you're under grace. But you're under favor. Now you're on God's side. Does that make sense to you? Is that hard to understand that? Some of you might have heard something for the first time. Maybe thought about something the first time. When I try up here, I do my very best to tell you what God does. Not what we do. Not what we should do. Not that we should obey. We just do what God does. I just love talking about what he does. I see it openly in the book of Romans. I see God's actions completely involved with the book of Romans. That man is not just talking out the side of his mouth. He says, I talked to Yeshua face to face. I think it's for 3 years. So the Messiah did come back down on earth and talk with him. He didn't come land his feet in Mount of Olives though. But he talked to him. He said, I learned this from no man. I learned this from the Lord. No man taught him. Peter didn't teach him. John didn't teach him. Bartholomew didn't teach him. Philip didn't teach him. Mary, the mother of Jesus, didn't teach him. None of the brothers of Jesus taught him. Only one person taught him. Now, you have to kind of look and say, okay, what is it that Yahshua actually was telling this man, who has not yet gone to Rome, don't think Catholic, because we're Catholic didn't exist then. There were a bunch of Jewish people there in Rome. They were the dominant source. He's talking to them, teaching them about Devarim Elohim. By and through the Son of God.